Section 2. The Basic Problem. There is a large array of books and scholars who have advanced various Jesus myth theories over the last two centuries. A historicist might complain that there are too many different theories being advanced, but that would only be the pot calling the kettle black. As I discussed in the previous chapter, and in Chapter 1 of Proving History, there are, for example, too many different theories of historicity as well. And if those are taken seriously, the fact that mythicism finds the same diversity of disagreement can be no objection to it, any more than it would be a valid objection to historicity. We must agree that most theories of historicity are false, since only one of the hundreds defended can actually be correct. Yet, historicity might still be true. So, too, mythicism. I won't explore the many flawed or ridiculous Jesus myth theories that have gone around or still circulate. I will only mention here the most credible defenses of mythicism, ranked in order of the extent to which they hold to the rules and axioms I summarized in Chapter 2 of Proving History. At the top of that list is Erhel Doherty's The Jesus Puzzle, Did Christianity Begin with a Mythical Christ? And his follow-up, Jesus, Neither God Nor Man, The Case for a Mythical Jesus. Complete, of course, with an extensive website in support of both at jesuspuzzle.humanists.net. I recommend a reader start with the first of those and treat the others as an appendix to it. Meanwhile, the most prestigious support for myth, coming from renowned doctors of biblical studies, are Thomas Thompson's The Messiah Myth, The Near Eastern Roots of Jesus and David, and Thomas Brodie's Beyond the Quest for the Historical Jesus, A Memoir of a Discovery. Whether some very insignificant Jesus might still lay at the origin of Christianity is a question Thompson considers unanswerable, but he still argues that the Gospels are fiction top to bottom, leaving nothing left that we can consider a historical Jesus. Arthur Droege, professor of early Christianity at the University of California, San Diego, and Kurt Knoll, associate professor of religion at Brandon University, agree with that agnostic assessment. Brodie only takes this to its natural conclusion, that originally there was no Jesus at all. So Doherty is not alone. Another PhD in the field making the case is Robert Price, with a whole series of books on the matter, from Deconstructing Jesus and The Incredible Shrinking Son of Man, to Jesus is Dead and The Case Against the Case for Christ, and most recently and most valuably, The Christ Myth Theory and Its Problems. Price's efforts have been more controversial and are often more debatable, but nevertheless, much of what he says has enough merit to at least consider, even if you reject it in the end. Among the controversies he has created is his tendency to advance and defend multiple contradictory accounts of the evidence, although that's in many ways more honest than what historicists do, since Price fully acknowledges the evidence is insufficient to confirm only one theory, and therefore many compete for viability. And in effect, this is what historicists tacitly assume in accepting, even if themselves rejecting, the many contradictory theories of their colleagues without scandal. Before this new vanguard of scholars arose, the most famous recent defender of the Jesus myth was George Wells, with over half a dozen books spanning 40 years from Did Jesus Exist in 1975 to Cutting Jesus Down to Size in 2009. His approach has evolved into essentially the position of Thompson, that there may yet be a historical Jesus behind it all, but there simply isn't sufficient evidence to know, as everything claiming to be about him is fiction. I place Wells near the bottom of my list of worthies because his competence in ancient history is not overly strong, and thus, although he has a lot of sound points to make, some of his premises and conclusions become untenable in light of background facts unknown to him. Before Wells, the very best outdated defense of the Jesus myth concept is Arthur Drews's The Christ Myth, published in 1910, which, despite its flaws, still has many sound points to make that are as true today as they were then. I could name other advocates now and in the past who may have worthwhile things to say in the matter, but as they often fall below acceptable bars of reliability or scholarly qualifications, they cannot contribute as much toward changing the scholarly consensus at this point. As with the historicists, I do not believe any one of the scholars I've named is quote-unquote right, but that the truth lies somewhere among them all. Just as one would not read, say, Robert Eisenman's James the Brother of Jesus, The Key to Unlocking the Secrets of Early Christianity and the Dead Sea Scrolls, and conclude, this is erudite and interesting, but complete bollocks, therefore Jesus didn't exist. So one should not read any particular mythicist and likewise conclude, this is erudite and interesting, but complete bollocks, therefore Jesus did exist. We all accept that every historicist is probably wrong about something, possibly quite a lot of things. They must be, as they all disagree. But we do not then conclude historicity is bunk. We conclude the truth lies somewhere among them all. We should approach mythicism the same way. Historicists will usually agree that once we trim away everything that's wrong or too speculative or inadequately demonstrated, we'll have something that can be reliably affirmed about the historical Jesus, even if it's literally nothing more than that he existed. And if this is how we behave in reaction to the contradictions and errors among historicists, and we must, as otherwise only a complete agnosticism about the historical Jesus would logically remain, we are obligated to behave the same in reaction to the contradictions and errors among mythicists. As for historicists, so for them. Once we trim away everything that's wrong or too speculative or inadequately demonstrated, we may yet have something that can be reliably affirmed about the historical Jesus, even if only that he didn't exist, or that we can't reliably know that he did. The same point can be expanded beyond the mainstream, for there are as many absurd theories of historicity as there are absurd Jesus myth theories. That Jesus toured India, or flew to North America, or exchanged letters with King Abgar, or convinced King Agrippa to back him on state currency as the Messiah, or that Jesus fathered a royal dynasty with Mary, and then his kin had to dodge imperial attempts to eliminate their bloodline, or that he staged all his miracles, including faking his death and resurrection, simply to set himself up as king of the Jews, which plan then failed, or that the canonical gospels are literally and entirely true down to the smallest detail. These are all theories of historicity that I must honestly say are extraordinarily untenable. Yet all have been advanced and defended by scholars somewhere at some time. The last of these especially, which even today has whole colleges pledged to defending it. So finding equally absurd theories among the mythicists is no more a strike against mythicism as the above theories are against historicity. We simply set them aside as not worth even considering, leaving only the tenable theories to entertain. As for historicity, so for myth. To avoid the monstrous task of a complete fact check of every mythicist book I've listed, which books I consider to be advancing tenable theories, just not necessarily the correct ones, I will take the obvious shortcut. I won't bother defending any of the elaborations or specific but unnecessary claims of any author. I will instead construct the most minimal, plausible Jesus myth theory and see how it holds up. As with the minimal theory of historicity, defined in the previous chapter, there may yet be much else we can show to be true. But before we can proceed down that path, we must first settle the basic question of whether we ought to be interpreting the evidence with the assumption that a historical Jesus existed or that he did not. Hence, I'll pit minimal historicity against minimal mythicism and see which has the greater merit in the final analysis. Other scholars can then build on that conclusion, which is what should have been done in the first place. Indeed, I see this as one of the greatest methodological mistakes of mythicists. Instead of first convincing the establishment of the basic merits of their interpretational framework and then recruiting the scholarly community in developing further conclusions therefrom, they immediately launch with elaborate conclusions about everything, making their theory all too easy to straw man into the dustbin. And that's essentially what's happened. In Chapter 1, I already discussed Van Voorst, who, in a few pages, directly rebuts mythicism, though really just Drews and Wells, and cited Thyssen and Mertz, who summarize a lengthier case against many generic mythicist claims. But only the weakest premises, and they never directly interact with any specific mythicist thesis. Other examples of recent criticism likewise touch only on some aspects of mythicism, and often inaccurately. And yet, these are the only scholarly attempts to refute mythicism worth reading, with the exception of several very outdated but still noteworthy works, which reveal, in their very efforts to rebut it, how popular was the idea, even among some experts of the time, that Jesus was a myth. All are examples of the inadequacy of scholarly responses even from the earliest days of the controversy. In fact, the assumption that mythicism has been refuted rests entirely on a series of fallacious rebuttals merely assumed to have been decisive. Shirley Jackson Case, for instance, soundly rebuts only certain mythicist arguments. That Case, and everyone afterward, concluded mythicism itself had thus been soundly rebutted is simply incorrect. We'll revisit this point in Chapter 11. Early mythicism of the sort Case documents was launched from many sound intuitions that remained forceful, but was often flawed and naive, and certainly methodologically unsound, as is a lot of myth advocacy still today. And all the early 20th century critics remain quite right about that. Accordingly, we need to wipe the slate clean and start over, using a humbler, more informed, and more methodologically sound approach. Only if that effort then fails, without being made into a straw man all over again, can it be concluded that mythicism tout court has been refuted. And then we can get on with the study of the historical Jesus.